Rossdale Homes, with over 30 years of building experience. Rossdalehomes.com.au.
Root, making news around the place, the top three things. The first arrest from the strawberry contamination saga. A woman, 50 years of age in Queensland. Now, she's a disgruntled farm worker, and they've tracked her down. It was the very first incident. There was a company called Berrylicious who send out punnets of strawberries, and they've tracked her down to working there. Now, they're saying she could face anything up to 10 years jail, this lady, which is quite severe, isn't it?
It's massive. If, I mean, you very rarely get the top sentence, but there'd be people out there'd say fair enough, but probably a few people hit the wall, there's no doubt about that, lost a hell of a lot of money, so
yep.
Be interesting to see what does happen towards the end. Gee, these fires over in California are out of control, Dits. They're saying 23 people dead now, so that's jumped since, I reckon it was only in the early teens yesterday, last night when we went to bed, so 23 people. 250,000 people evacuated.
Wow. I've just seen a stat too. 67,000 homes it's affected. That's enormous.
Biggest fire ever. So, and Trump is blaming forest mismanagement. Absolutely ripping shreds off them, saying that billions of dollars will be, they're already giving them billions to try and fight it. It's funny he says that, because when we've had fires here, a lot of people agree with that in Australia, that the more of the greenies, if you want to call them that, are hesitant to do enough clearing of land.
Right.
So that if a fire does break out, you can actually stop it.
Mm.
So it's interesting he said that, because I know a lot of people in Port Lincoln, they've had some dangerous fires over there, and the same said of that, because back in the day, there used to be a lot of land clearing or lighting of fires to create fire breaks.
Burn
so
off,
if something
got
out of control, it was in a lot better shape. So that would be interesting if he's right on that one, old Trumpy.
Mm.
Interesting story in the paper as well, Dits, about money worries keeping people awake at night. Lots and lots of people with the rising cost of living now and slow wage growth over the last few years. Hopefully that's about to change, but the wages, but the rising cost of living is not going to change. In fact, someone told me the other day power bills are going to go up another 50% over the next year or two.
You're kidding.
No, which would be absolutely just horrendous. We were talking on the weekend with just the mates up there. How many people's power bills over $1,000 a quarter? Like most people's houses that are living in $1,000, $1,500.
Yep.
It's a bloody lot of money. So, there's a new report out in the paper today saying how, 34% have money on their mind all the time. 19% admit it's always in the back of their minds. 15% conceded like they actually worried about it all the time. People consistently checking their bank accounts to see if they've got enough, to get through and pay all the bills. I don't know. Do you think it's a lot of people like that out there at the moment?
You would have to say they are, Roo. And let's face it, there are the haves and the have-nots. And I think a lot of people that are living on the breadline do have to budget on a daily basis. They have to make that decision. Can I go and fill the car up with petrol, or cannot? A lot of things that maybe you and I take for granted, there are some people that cannot take that for granted.
Look, I know heaps. I agree. I think people would be thinking about it all the time. I mean, I think about stuff all the time. Just when you get with the bills, how they go, it just does you. People must be just making some decisions out there to survive that they shouldn't have to at the moment.
Yep.
Simple as putting your fan on when you go to bed. There'd be people there that wouldn't do it, would they?
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I don't know if you want to take a few quick calls on that. But people out in Australia at the moment, money on their mind all the time. Give us a ring if you're like that at the moment. 1-333-53. Is it always on your mind? What are you thinking about with money, and how hard are you doing it with your bills at the moment? Give us a quick buzz. 1-333-53.
Oh, Roo, money matters. Tell us, what's the percentage again? How many people just lay awake at night thinking about dough?
34% have money on their minds constantly. 19% admit that it's always on their mind. 57% are checking their bank account regularly. We owe $51 billion on credit cards at the moment. $32 billion of that is getting interest charged as well, so not paying back after your date comes up. Let's go to Albert Park. G'day, Mark.
Good morning, boys. How are you going?
Good, thanks, mate.
I read that article this morning before I come out to work. I work in the transport industry, drive trucks, and that's an industry that's forever cutting costs, and wages actually move down from time to time if you sort of get with a smaller group of people. And I talk to guys that work in warehouses, guys that operate forklifts, guys that work in offices. And I'm telling you, mate, there's a huge workforce out there that's under $60,000 a year,
yep.
You know, around 50, 55, a massive workforce. And I think of the way they tell everybody about what the average wage is, it needs to be broken down into more like into stages, like who's under 60,000, who's under 80. You get a fair idea, because there's a lot of people out there doing it very tough, and their wages haven't moved for something like 10 and 12 years now.
Well, that's impossible, isn't it?
CPI goes up by the rate of inflation every quarter and half year and year. But I'm telling you, mate, wages don't go up 0.5% a year. Mine haven't moved for bloody 2 years. I'm on $24 an hour.
Yeah, well, you make a real, real good point. So there needs to be some sort of inquiry into that right across the board. So if you haven't had a pay rise for 10 to 12 years, that's outrageous.
Unbelievable.
Mark's right, you know, CPI every year, it's all we ever hear about. Yeah, well, wages have to go accordingly.
Well, it's gone up a bit this year, CPI, but it's been flat. But
what about a couple of weeks ago? We talked about that protest march in Melbourne that attracted 150,000 people. They then had a march here in Adelaide, and that's what it was all about, that wages just haven't gone up accordingly.
No.
There's a report out today saying that too many of us lay awake at night concerned about our money, concerned about our financial position and our woes, and it's just getting tougher and tougher, Roo. It's not healthy.
No, constantly checking your bank balances, wages not going up, cost of living going up. And I said to you the other day, a bloke told me that he reckons power bills are going to continue to go up. Let's go to Adelaide Hills. G'day, Tom.
Yeah, morning, fellas. How you going?
Good, thanks, Tom. What are you up to today?
I was on my way to work on my day off.
Really? You're on your way to work on your day off.
Why is that?
Yeah, I was much like the last call. I was in the transport industry for a bit over a decade and working in local and interstate, and I was making money, but I just wasn't seeing my family. My kids were growing up without me. It was becoming quite a problem, so I pulled it back, and I'm currently working for a local government, which allows Ross a day off. But having to make up that shortfall forced me to get a second job. And I think that idea of chasing the work-life balance is a lot harder than a lot of people think.
Yep, because you just got no option. You just have to work that extra hours to get the extra income to do everything you got to do.
That's exactly right. I mean, a lot of people think, well, we'll just take care of that electricity bill and we'll be okay. We'll start putting money away. Then something else comes up and, you know, before you know it, the end of the year's rolled around again and it's Christmas time again.
Does your wife or partner work as well, Tom?
Yeah, see, I've got two older kids, and together we've had a little boy. He's 2.5, so she works part-time. And, you know, between that, we've tried to sort of tailor our lifestyle to sort of squeeze out as much work as possible, but it still very much is week to week.
Yep. Yeah, it's common theme.
Thanks for calling in, Tom.
It's interesting. We wouldn't mind getting this bloke on to talk about it, but I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon from what you hear.
No,
unfortunately,
they are massive issues that, again, I don't know what the right word is, some sort, it's not a royal commission, but it's some sort of investigation into what's happened here with our energy industry, our power industry. Something's got to be done right from the top all the way down, Ruth.
Absolutely, I agree.
It's out of control.
I agree, 100%. They need to check it out further.
What a goal!
Ruined its overnight sports.
South Africa has wrapped up the one-day series, Roo, with a victory over the Aussies in the decider in Hobart last night. I'm going to ask you about cricket later on. I want to do a segment on this. I think cricket is in big, big trouble.
Well, I think
huge people, trouble.
I think the sandpaper saga has had more of an impact than what. But just talking about it over the weekend, a lot of regular Aussie punters were on my trip and it actually really shattered a lot of people, I reckon.
Yeah, but cricket worldwide is on its knees, Roo. No crowds at tests, no crowds at ODIs. It's
but we have had tests, big crowds at tests in that, you know, the last 5 years, haven't we?
Mm.
Like, we've really gone down here lately with this, I think.
Yeah. The Proteas defended 321 despite 106 from Sean Marsh. Marcus Stornis made 63. Our own Alex Carey made 42. Adelaide United have suffered their first loss of the season. They went down to Perth Glory 2-0 at High Marsh. Let's hear from the coach, Marco Kurz.
At the end, I think it was not our best performance, and Perth did it well. Also, intensity was not so high as I expected or as we need, and also the compactness was not.
Well, hopefully they can bounce back. They're going pretty well in general, though, aren't they, Dids?
Yeah, I think so. Well, they won the cup only a couple of weeks ago, and so just a minor hiccup for them. The AFL is underlining Port Adelaide's Chinese expedition. They've signed a 5-year agreement to help nurture the expansion of football into China.
More live sport over there, don't they, the Chinese?
They do. And Lewis Hamilton's spread the icing on the championship cake, winning this morning's Brazilian Grand Prix. Daniel Ricciardo settling for fourth place. He just he doesn't quite get there, Ricciardo. He's always hovering around the top three, top four, isn't he?
Yep. He's getting better. Hopefully he'll take it to the next level over the next couple of years.
All right. Drew, on Friday, I know you were away having a day off with your mates, which is fantastic, but we were offered the opportunity to interview someone that I just find hilarious, and I'm talking about Eric Idle. Mm. Now, are you a Monty Python fan?
Oh, I only caught the end of it a little bit, or the start of it in my early days.
Yep. Well, Eric Idle spoke to us all the way from LA. He's released a new book, and you might remember he's the one in the Monty Python crew that penned the song Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, and that's what the book is called. So I was lucky enough to speak to Eric Idle from LA on Friday. Eric, thanks so much for joining us. I must say, I am a pathetic fan. I just absolutely love you. I love everything Monty Python, and I'm really enjoying reading your book as well. And thanks so much for joining us this morning on Triple M.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Eric, the one thing that springs to mind for me, I don't know if you get this feedback yourself personally, but I've loved Monty Python ever since the day you fellas all started. And there are the serious ones, the straight actors, the straight comedians like John Cleese and Graham Chapman. And then there's yourself and Michael Palin. You have this ability that all we have to do is look at you and we laugh. I don't know what it is, whether it's the way you look or your face or something. But, I mean, is that the sort of feedback you get, that you've always been the more comedic one of the troupe?
I'm not really sure. I know Michael's very funny. John's very funny, but he's very deadpan.
Yeah.
That was his forte. And Graham was very good at being believable in those kind of soppy lead roles, you know. Everybody added something that somebody else couldn't do.
You're well known for so many things, but one of them has to be nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know, say no more, all of that. Where did that come from?
I don't really know. I mean, I think it was sort of partly based on some pub characters I'd been observing. And I actually wrote it for Ronnie Barker. Do you remember?
Yes.
You know, two Ronnies.
Yeah.
And they sent it back because they didn't find it funny. And if you look at it from the page, it isn't funny. There's no jokes in it.
Yeah.
You read it out, know what I mean, know what I mean, no. Yeah. But if you do it in that way, which is how I did it to the guys, then they all laughed and said, oh, that's it. It was one of the earliest things we ever got accepted.
Yeah.
And it was thanks to the two Ronnies sending it back.
Unbelievable. And it really has become one of your catch cries, as has Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. Now, when you wrote this song, you actually wrote this. I'm just wondering, musically, Did you write a lot of things, or was this the only song that you ever wrote?
No, I've written a lot of things. I mean, I like writing tunes. I mean, I wrote One Foot in the Grave. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I wrote and sang that song.
Okay.
I wrote the Galaxy song, but I'm a guitarist, so all my songs are kind of tend to be guitar based. But that was very 30s and 40s. You know, I was using a lot of jazz chords to write Bright Side.
Yeah.
Because it gave it a sort of nice old fashioned feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, which is like a wartime song, really, looking on the bright side of things, you know.
So many people sing it, so many people use it, don't they, in situations?
Well, they do, but I mean, the point is it was used very ironically, since they are being crucified at the time.
Yes,
there's not an awful lot of bright sides to look forward to. So, what was interesting is about 13 years later, when they started to sing it at football matches, people began to use it in other contexts, and in the context of warfare, too, when things were very bleak. So there's a recognition of the irony, I think, in it, but it also cheers people up.
Yeah. You've done so many things, so the questions are coming out sort of rapid fire, really, but I am reading your book at the moment. Some of the people that you've been involved with in your life, some of the great comedic characters. It's actually quite extraordinary. And not only the comedic characters, but some of the great musicians. I mean, you're friends with David Bowie and Mick Jagger and Paul Simon you've met over the years. And I was really fascinated to read where, as a little boy, you played with George Harrison, like as little school friends. It's amazing the people that you've been involved with in your life.
Yes, I think, well, that's mainly because we were all the same generation, you know. We're all born towards the end of that, of World War II, you know, 1943 onwards. And so it was sort of natural that when, you know, we were successful in comedy, people liked us, so they would always want to come and hang out, really. And then for me, it was easier because I played guitar, so I could hang out with people who played guitars. And also, they were very funny. You know, who knew Bowie was hilarious? He'd spend most of the day laughing. It was just, it was a breath of fresh air. I wasn't a particularly big Bowie fan, but then when I got to know him, you know, he was always very funny, but he was also very intellectual. I found him quite interesting. I mean, he introduced me to the Strauss Four Last Songs and all sorts of very interesting things. He was a very fascinating man, quite brilliant, actually.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Eric, good luck with the book. Leading up to Christmas, I'm sure many, many people are going to queue up to buy this. It's Eric Idle. It's Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
I'm coming to Adelaide.
You are?
I'm here in about 10 days. I'm doing a
brilliant
thing, so I will be in Adelaide, which I'm very happy because I've only been once before, so I'm looking forward to it.
Now, I've got it here. Thursday, the 22nd of November at 6:30. This is at the Adelaide Convention Centre. We will be there. There's no doubt about that, at 6:30 p.m. And we'll make sure we plug this in the lead up to it as well. But we look forward to having you in Adelaide. Eric, you are one of the all-time superstars. And I think the best compliment I can pay you is that if we're sitting around at a dinner party or we're out with friends, everyone's got a Monty Python moment. Everyone quotes a line from a movie or from one of your episodes. And I think that's just a great compliment to you and to all of the crew as well.
Well, thank you. Long may it last.
Yeah. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you here in Adelaide on the 22nd.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
6:52, Roo and Ditz here on Triple M Roo. It is time for our Monday phone-in.
Yeah, look,
who have you got on the line there?
Not sure who we've got here. Hello, good morning.
G'day, boys. It's Murray.
Hey, Murray.
You up around this neck of the woods, Roo? You didn't call in the pub.
Well, you know, you tend to get stuck there.
You know, I've got some good news for you. I was talking to the Torrens River.
Torrens River.
He's slow moving and always unclear.
Right. Yeah, that's the Torrens. Yeah, that's good.
And a few of those.
Anyway, you're in the pub game, Roo, aren't you, mate? Yeah. We've got this new game up here. You might be able to use it at your pub. It's called Break the Seal.
Break the Seal. Right. How do you play that?
Well, you get all the blokes that want to play it in the bar, then you put masking tape around the door of the gents, and it's free beers for everyone until one bloke breaks the seal.
Right. Okay. In more ways than one.
So once the seal's broken, it goes, then the free drinks are off.
Right.
Right.
So, it works really well.
Well, I'd try that.
A bit expensive for the publican,
though. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, if you don't drink a lot, you can last, and you're never the bloke that breaks the seal, but if someone goes hard, they break the seal.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've got another tip for you in your pubs. You know how you say, last drinks, please, mate, last drinks?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, rather than yelling that out all the time, just say, open mic poetry starts in 5 minutes.
Yeah, good. I like that. That'll clear the joint. Yeah.
Okay, see you, boys.
All right, thanks, Mars. Good on you, mate. Yeah, he likes to ring in every Monday, Murray. Next caller. Who have we got there? Hello, good morning.
Hello, this is Faith.
Who?
I'm calling from Blenstone over then in Hobart. This is Fleff Duplessis.
Oh, Fleff.
South African. Cricketer.
How are you?
I saw your billboard when we were playing in the game too. I thought I'd ring you. Boys, you lads did pretty well in the series, but, you know, I just wanted to ring up and say hi. I love Adelaide and had a great game there in this. And, you know, your Adelaide was fantastic. I love it.
Oh, good. Got the test match coming up.
Well, that's right. Shame we missed that on seeing my mate Morney Morkel. Apparently, I didn't follow the story closely, but I heard on the radio Morney Morkel, he was over here helping Prince Harry open the Invictus Games. Would have been nice to have catch up with him.
Yeah, well, maybe next time. You're channeling, you sound a little bit like Prince Charles at times as well, I must say. So anyway, Faf.
The only thing is I want to say to the Australian crowds, you know, there's Dwayne Pretorius. They call him Oscar. They yell at Oscar. That's Oscar Pistorius.
Oh,
they start to do gags, you know.
Right.
They start out, they're yelling out from the crowds, you'll never go at leg before wicket and things like that.
Right.
That's not very fair.
It's
so,
not
but, you
funny.
Know, we have,
no.
We do have a thing, you know, he's pretty tough, Dwayne Prestoris. You know, we say, roses are red, proteas are glorious. Don't mess around with Oscar Pistorius.
Right, no, I like it. All right, thanks. Thanks for calling in, Faf.
Shame that morning Mockle, I didn't catch up with him. He's touring with Prince Charles, with Prince Harry.
It is a shame. All right,
next time.
Yeah, well, love to hear from you again soon. Let's go to our next caller. Hello.
G'day, boys.
Is that the Texan?
Yeah. How do you reckon I went?
Oh, I think you're pretty good.
Well, did you listen?
Well, for about 10 minutes.
Oh, I was filling in for you. I thought you might have listened a little bit more. But anyway.
Tex, we thought you were very, very good.
Very, very good. I'm worried.
Very impressive.
Yeah, well, you might be able to replay the favour because I've got a Bucks weekend coming on. We've got pre-season at the moment, Roo. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could just turn up.
Just do the session for you?
Do the session for you and replay the favour.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll see how we go.
Anyway, this bloke walks into the doctor and the doc says, how can I help you? And he said, I've got a cricket ball stuck up my backside.
Mm.
The doctor says, how's that? The bloke says, don't you start.
Get on your text. I like it. Roo, can we just go back to Faf? I've just worked out. Faf had his wires crossed. He was talking about Mornay Morkel. It was actually Meghan Markle that was out of your opening.
I thought I missed out on something.
Yeah, no, I was a bit slow on that one. I think I've just worked it out.
Okay.
Hey, we've got time for one more call, Roo.
Hello, good morning. Who's that?
It's me.
Helen.
Helen from Hindley Street.
Hello, Helen.
Oh, Helen.
The Spice Girls are doing a tour. I love the Spice Girls.
Mm.
Who's your favourite Spice Girl, Christopher?
Well, I don't know if I've got a favourite. I like them all, really, but probably Ginger Spice.
Who do you like, Mark?
Baby.
I like them all. Yes. I was just wondering, would there be any tickets available if they come to Australia? Oh,
we might be able to sort
you out, Helen. Yeah. We could probably find a double for you and Dick.
You know what? They should call the tour. They should name it after the aftershave a lot of my clients wear.
What's that?
The Old Spice Tour.
Old Spice Tour, yes. I like that. You might be right. All right, thanks for calling in, Helen. Good on you. That's all we've got time for with our Monday phoning, thank God.
Exactly
right. Righto, 6:57, ruined. It's here on Triple M.
Time for the pressure test. Give us a buzz, 133353 if you want to win $1,000 cash.
Through. I'm just wondering what the aftermath is in Melbourne this morning after the terrible incident that happened on Friday. Where do we go with this as a nation? There are so many questions. Channel 7's correspondent Robert Avardia is there in Melbourne on the spot. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What is the aftermath here? What's our government saying about perhaps our watch list? We're led to believe there are some 300 or 400 people of persons of interest here in the country. I just wonder what happens with that moving forward.
Well, it is until the law changes. It is what it is. Unfortunately, the way the law is structured is that you can't be thought police, so you can't jail somebody for having inclinations, for having thoughts. The madness is that they have to actually commit a crime. And unfortunately, when you have so many people on the watch list, you cannot have a cop sitting in their living room 24 hours a day. And the problem with lone wolf attacks, if there is no conspiracy, if there's nothing complicated that is easier to detect, if it's a spur of the moment decision, they decide to hell with this, grab a knife, get in the car and go down to Bourke Street, it's very, very difficult to stop that. And it is, as you say, a bit scary that so many people are actually on the watch list, have those sorts of inclination.
What are people of Melbourne saying at the moment? Are they unhappy with our rules? Are they unhappy with our immigration policy? I mean, where are they at in Melbourne?
Oh, you're getting a mixture of both. I think people, you know, Melbourne in particular is a city about civil liberties, so that has to be understood. But you look at the victim of this as well, Sisto Malaspina, just a poignant, symbolic man who helped found the city's cafe culture, of all the people to be killed in this. I think people are really not concentrating so much on the politics. They're looking at the toll from this, I think. Their hearts are broken for such a gorgeous man and part of their city. So I don't think the politics has been as strong at the moment. It's more the outpouring of grief for him and for what's happened. And, of course, the admiration for the people who help police.
There's been a couple of incidents in Melbourne in the last 12 months. We had the fella that drove his car down Bourke Street, which was just horrific. Now we've had this one. There was another fella outside the Flinders Street train station going berserk in a car as well. Are Melburnians feeling, you know, from what you've spoken to over the weekend, has their city changed forever? If you're in London or Paris in this day and age, you are forever aware and forever vigilant about the likelihood of terrorism. You're always told there are announcements at airports, in train stations. Is Melbourne about to head down that path, do you think?
Oh, it's very difficult to tell. It could well be, but London and Paris especially are different. We're talking about several hundred people in Australia. There are a minimum 5,000 in France that are on a similar watch list. So I think the lifestyle there is a little bit different, but I think Australians pride themselves on their resilience to these sorts of things. I think Melbourne is a very close-knit culture and a close-knit city as well. I don't think Melburnians will let this sort of thing define them or be scared of it. And it's funny, you know, there are so many people who die in car crashes every year. There are people who die from domestic violence. The reality is those are greater dangers than terrorism. But I think what terrorism does, it tears at the fabric of society. Its specific aim is to undermine the happiness of a society. So I think that's why we care about it so much, in spite of the fact that, relatively speaking, fewer people die from it. It's the fact that these people seek to bring down our way of life. And I don't think Melburnians will bend to that too easily.
Robert, he was wanting to fly out overseas in 2015 to join ISIS. Why do we stop people from doing that? Why don't we let people go over there and not let them come back?
The reality is there is an obligation to the international community, and all countries tend to abide by that, where if one country feels that a criminal offence is going to be committed in another country, we put a stop to it. Now, unfortunately, you're right, it's a no-brainer. That means that problem is now confined to home and can emerge in what we saw a couple of days ago in Bourke Street.
But if he's going to go over there and commit an offence, is that an offence to start with? Should he be locked up then?
Well, again, you get back to the thought police. You know, you can't say what he is definitely going to do.
We're not letting him go over there. That's the thought police, because we're not letting him go over if we think he's going to commit a crime.
Yeah, but we're preventing a crime rather than locking him up.
Yeah,
so locking him up,
it's a tough one, isn't it?
Their liberty. So it is very tough. I mean, look, the man on the street, and me included, I'm in that camp where you're inclined to say, to hell with him, let him go and kill himself. You know, I think that's probably what the majority of Australians think.
But or lock him up.
You just have to take them. Yeah, or lock him up. But, yeah. You know, it's a very, very difficult thing. And unfortunately, you're looking at a complex legal structure where so many laws are reliant on another. And if you say, well, if you do this for the terrorist, then you have to do this for somebody else as well. And then you start to head down a path of thought police stuff. It is very tricky stuff, because it seems a no-brainer that this is about national security here. And there are people who are so overwhelmingly of a certain persuasion, you just want to get rid of them.
Mm. Robert, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Robert Avardia, senior correspondent from Channel 7 News over there in Melbourne. Rue, just, you know, my little thoughts on this. Look, if there are 400 people on a watch list, I can think of the Dusty Martin situation where his father was deported to New Zealand. Mm. Because Peter Dutton found at the time that he was an undesirable person. We can actually act on that. I disagree slightly with what Robert's saying. Robert's saying, oh, they need to commit a crime. Actually, as a government, you do have the power to deport people if you don't think they're the right character. That's what needs to happen right now. And I'm not going off on some, you know, vigilante, you know, rant about get rid of all Muslims, because it's not about that. I don't believe every Muslim's a bad person, because they're not. But if there are 400 people on a watch list, they're on that list for a reason. Either they've dealt with each other via social media and talked about the wrong sorts of things like terrorism or whatever, I'm sorry, but deport them now. Again, we've waited until it's too late, Rue.
Mm. No, I know. It frustrates everyone. Absolutely, it does.
So I reckon we need to act, seriously. And what's the point of having 1,000 people locked up on Nauru? Process them now. If they are the right people to be allowed into our country, then do their paperwork, let them in, or send them back. No good having 1,000 people on Nauru for 5 years doing nothing.
Look, it's out of my depth a little bit, but just in the basics, I don't understand why we keep them in Australia and all like that. But I mean, the thing that we haven't spoken about, we knew this bloke. I got I've been taken to this restaurant a heap of times in Melbourne by my cousin, and end up forming, you know, like you do with any restaurant you go to several times, you form a little bit of a bond with them. And we ate in the kitchen of this restaurant, Dits, when we were over in Melbourne, a couple of years ago. Front and center, in with all the old Italians cooking, and it is an iconic restaurant of Melbourne. I think he had the first espresso machine in Melbourne.
Yep.
He's an icon, and he's gone. And that's why Melbourne are doing it as tough as anything at the moment. I think, you know, something that they won't be able to replace has been taken away from them.
Yep, fair comment.
Ruined Dits for breakfast.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
Lehman.
Lehman!
I'm Anthony Lehman.
Yeah. Or is it Ivan Milat?
Nearly grown legs. It really has got legs, hasn't it?
Can people stop? This is, you guys are talking about my Mo for November, of course. But can people either say Ivan Milat or Chopper Reid? And quite frankly, I'm finding it offensive. Not one person.
Quite frankly, that's what you look like.
Well, not one person has said Hulk Hogan.
Right? Oh, come on.
Or Burt Reynolds. Come on, guys.
Burt Reynolds.
What?
It's a scary month to be in Australia, really, with some of the shocking Mo's that get around. We had a couple on our boys' trip. They just, you know, I don't think they help much, do they?
Imagine a backpacker landing in Australia in November. What a terrifying time.
Wow. They still love their moustaches here. They're back.
Not quite as friendly as I would imagine this place. Hey, you mentioned your boys' trip there. Yeah. Dits, I've got something for you, Dits.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, you guys made the big announcement, very exciting announcement for Triple M that you'd re-signed for a few more years. When was that? Was that in August?
It might have been earlier than that.
Yeah, about August. Dits, since then, my last calculation, Roo's had about 8 weeks off.
Come on.
And he's had Friday off as well. I mean, I think you should leave your contract announcements to a little later in the year.
Right,
he's clearly put the queue in the rack.
Conversely, I call Friday night footy, Saturday night, I do Sunday mornings, I do the dishes here, I vacuum, I do everything.
Yeah.
You've got your little maid's outfit on right now.
Yeah. Right, are you had your whinge?
By the way, move on, guys.
We keep reminding Roo how good Tex Walker was on Friday. Did a very good job.
Yeah, actually, I was listening Friday, and I just really, because often when I listen to your show, I'll listen for half an hour here, half an hour. I couldn't turn it off Friday.
Yeah.
Just kept me hooked in.
I heard a couple of his live reads. You shouldn't have made him. That was not fair on the business. That was unfair on the businesses.
What, getting him to do the ads? We had a bit of feedback saying clearer and more better diction than the bloke we normally have.
I'd like to know who gave you that feedback.
And sales have gone through the roof for each of those companies he did the live. I can't believe, Roo, you've just given Tex an air check live on air. he should appreciate that. Hey, one other thing, you mentioned your houseboat trip on the weekend there, Roo.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of midlife crises happening on that boat.
Oh, one bloke's bought a Mustang.
Well, can I tell you where I'm at? This is how my midlife crisis is manifesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking at buying a ute.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Now, right.
Like a proper trade. I don't know, like a...
What are you on, a tray top?
Like a Ford Ranger or something like that. You know, it's like a tough-looking tradie style ute.
Hilux?
Oh, maybe a Hilux. Any one of those. Yeah. I'd be happy with that. And I was talking to a bloke who has a car yard on the weekend, and I said, I'm looking at buying a ute. And he goes to me, oh, yeah, what sort of terrain are you driving over? Is it... cross country, mate. You going camping? Is it a farming thing you got going on? I said, oh, there's a couple of speed humps in my street.
Just bitumen.
Roadworks up the road from me that I've got to navigate around.
Tirac track.
So, why do you want a ute?
I want to reclaim some portion of my manhood.
Right.
But I felt slowly slip away over the last few years.
They're good to have, Lima. But now you got kids, have come in handy.
Yeah. Oh, you put the kids in the back, do you?
We used to in the country.
You did. You just tie down the tray over there.
Just hold on, we're about to go.
But wrap him in bubble wrap and throw him in the back.
Can I just tell you a quick story? Because I often say, Liam, I often say to Roo that I play golf with Rocky and Crowbar, these two blokes that used to own the Larkspur Hotel. Yeah. And I thought Crowbar was because he was just big and tough and hard, you know, rock solid sort of thing. Yeah. But he got the nickname Crowbar when he was a young lad living in the bush. They used to put him in the back of the ute after they'd left the pub at midnight, and he would just roll around in the back. So
like a crowbar.
Like a crowbar. That's how he got his nickname.
Geez, that's how they do it with the divvy van, don't they?
That's right. Oh, hey, another speed bump.
Oh, there we go. Sorry, mate. You'll be all right. We'll be at the station soon. Because at the moment I'm driving a Nissan Juke, which is my wife's car, and I look like Mr. Incredible when I sit in it.
I've never heard of a Nissan Juke.
It's this tiny little
it's
thing.
It's smaller than a Mini Miner, isn't it?
Yeah, seriously. I've got to undo the sunroof to get my head out the top.
Hightower.
Can you borrow a real car?
She loves
it. Matchbox car's bigger than that.
She loves it. You know how she describes it? She says it's zippy.
Zippy. Zippy. Oh. So you're going to get a Ute.
So I'm thinking about a Ute. Now, does that make me a giant flog?
No,
medium-sized one.
Just the same size you are now.
No, Lee. I reckon you're fine if you get a Ute. That's an Aussie male on Triple M.
Right, he's got a Hilux. Yeah, good. Yep. Okay, I'm feeling good about that. Well, tell me, does this make me a flog? I've become an expert in baby chinos.
What do you mean?
Well, my son loves drinking baby chinos.
Right. Yeah.
And but I'm very specific about the baby chino. He gets him in a little piccolo size takeaway cup.
Yeah.
But he wants to drink it like his dad, right?
Yeah.
And if they just do froth and sprinkles and put a marshmallow in there, he can't drink it because you don't get anything.
Yeah. Mm.
So now I go over and I find myself instructing baristas how to make a baby chino.
Oh,
I tell them how much froth, how much milk, how many sprinkles, leave the marshmallow out, don't need a spoon, put the lid on top.
There's no such thing as a standard coffee anymore.
It really isn't.
All the kids wants the moustache anyway from the froth, doesn't he?
He wants the sprinkles. He wants the little mo. He wants a mo like dad's. Except don't start calling him Ivan Milat, all right?
You want December to start if that happens, Limo.
Indeed.
Right, we got to move on. Thanks, Limo.
Good on you guys. Hulk Hogan, remember that next time.
I'll
Hulk
see you.
Hogan.
Well, thanks, Ivan. We'll do that Thursday.
See ya. Rue, I never ever thought I'd say this, but I'm a bit concerned about the sport of cricket. I think it might be dying. And I know you're going to say, what a massively outrageous statement to make, but I'm quite serious about this. When you consider...
How many people do we have Friday in Adelaide?
I didn't see the final crowd, but the place was empty.
Like 7,000 or something, wasn't it?
Now, you remember one-day crowds when, you know, it started years ago, World Series cricket. You could not get a ticket, and the places were packed, jam-packed, hanging from the rafters.
Big Bash has killed it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
20 over cricket.
But I think cricket itself killed it in that the authorities were making money out of one-dayers, what we call ODIs, and I think they scheduled far too many. You know, summer's gone by.
Well, they're not even relevant.
How many one-day games were there?
Well, they don't actually mean anything,
do
they?
No, that's right. So... crowds at test matches are woeful. Now, we still do okay here in Australia. But
we do well when we got women for the Ashes and stuff. We had massive crowds.
Yeah, but the rest of the world doesn't. The rest of the world...
What about
cricket,
in India?
No, gone.
And then they're huge in cricket. What, they cannot afford to go?
I think, you know, it's one of these things where cricket started a long, long time ago. And as you know, Rue, I'm stating the obvious here, but a sporting event that takes 5 days just doesn't wash in modern society. There's no way in the world we can justify... a game of anything. Like, you reckon football quarters are too long. You reckon 5 days is too long to play a game of sport?
Yeah, no, I totally understand.
And all day, every day.
All sports like that are suffering, aren't they?
Priorities have changed. We can't sit in front of the TV all day or be at the ground all day anymore like we used to, can we?
No.
So one day crowds are gone, test match crowds are gone, and we're now left with T20. And I fear that they're about to hammer that to death as well.
Well, there's tournaments all over the world in that, isn't there?
There are leagues everywhere.
Yep.
And there are some people that would argue, well, it's just not cricket anyway, bashing, trying to hit every ball for a six. I mean, it's not what we grew up
not
with.
The
it's
not traditionalists.
No. Now, you might say, gee, you're sounding a little bit old-fashioned here. I don't mean to because I am a cricket tragic.
I
love cricket.
Yep.
But there's an article today, Rue, as well, stating that, do you know the Australian cricket team is now the least favourite of our sporting sides? The Socceroos are now number one in Australia. Can you believe that?
And the cricketers used to be number one.
By miles.
So
everyone wanted to wear a baggy green cap. Every kid dreamt of opening the batting for Australia and so on. And that's no longer the case. Now, you were saying to me earlier, you think it's just on the back of the sandpaper game,
don't you? Definitely that's taken a massive part of it. But I think our leadership, I don't know, I don't like... potting blokes, but I just feel like we haven't had the right leaders, like the right captains. From Michael Clark, Steve Smith. I don't know. It's just, you can see how, I just don't know. They're just, bit different. I don't even know the blokes personally, but...
Well, I just thought I'd raise it because the crowd here last week was appalling. It was terrible. And people vote with their feet. If they don't want to go, they're not interested anymore. I think TV ratings have plummeted as well. There is a real problem with cricket at the moment.
If you put it through the pub test, that sandpaper gate, it just doesn't wash with normal punters cheating and playing sport.
No.
Well, how you could even try and do it. I still don't actually understand from a captain how you could even think about doing it, getting away with it, instructing someone to do it. It just doesn't even get near it, does it, sport?
No, well, it's really hurt the image of the Australian cricket team now. Because like I said, the survey that was done says that even the Wallabies, who are a real basket case at the moment, they're more popular than our Australian cricket team.
Yeah, and they only really played that sport in a couple of states properly, don't they?
Sydney and Brisbane, two cities, yeah. So there you go, Roy.
Hopefully they can bounce back because I grew up loving cricket just like you did. So and we need them being successful because so many young kids love playing cricket. So we need them back up, having the respect and being as popular as they once were. But time will tell, won't it?
A major emergency is unfolding right there in Melbourne.
A car is on fire and has exploded.
The man has stabbed a person to death and left two others injured.
In what's been described as a frenzied knife attack.
Unfortunately, one is deceased at the scene. Police shot the male in the chest.
He succumbed to his injuries and died from that gunshot wound.
Our city and state is stronger than this act of evil. We're not going to be cowed by it, we're not going to be defined by it, and we won't be deterred by it.
Here in Australia, we would be kidding ourselves if we did not call out the fact that the greatest threat of religious extremism in this country is the radical and dangerous ideology of extremist Islam.
I've seen the trolley to the side, so I've picked it up and I've ran and threw the trolley straight at him, got him but didn't get him down, and I did that motion about quite a number of times, but it just wasn't getting him down.
So we heard there from our Prime Minister Roo in the aftermath, and also the witness that was there at the time trying to bring the terrorist down with his trolley. Very brave fella.
Yeah, he did a good job, actually, but couldn't quite get him down.
Now, from time to time, we catch up with Professor Greg Barton, counter-terrorism expert at Deakin University, and he joins us again this morning. Professor Barton, thanks for your time.
Good to be back with you.
On a world level, this morning, Roo and I have spoken about cities like London and Paris. Gee, I'd hate to think that Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, any of our cities now are on that sort of high alert as well. Do you think we are?
No, we're not. And if you think about it, the way things went on Friday could have, I mean, it's very tragic to see lives lost, particularly one innocent life, but it could have been very much worse. And the reason it wasn't was that the police had trained, particularly since the Lindt Cafe siege, trained to respond with, if necessary, with lethal force, so there's no other choice. Without waiting for any further orders, and they did that. They were there within 90 seconds. And also the general public responded very well. We've seen that in London as well, of course. What that means is that put to the stress test, if the worst happens, if we can't stop a terror attack being launched, at least we can shut it down very quickly. So that's the good news. And the chance of another lone actor attack occurring is there, but we've got to put it in perspective. There are many more likely things to worry about, and things that happen on a daily or weekly basis. Domestic violence is the obvious one, so we've got to frame it in a proper way. Otherwise, frankly, we're letting the terrorists win if we get scared.
Do we need to do anything differently in Australia, in your eyes, about how we prevent them, or how we whether the police force, whether immigration? Do you think we need to do anything differently?
If we can do one thing differently, I mean, the police system, the intelligence, all of the community relations, all of those things work well. Where we could do more is working with troubled young people who have got concerns about whatever their background and whatever their concerns. We know in the case of the Bourke Street attacker that he'd allegedly tried to travel to Syria, and in any case, police had sufficient to cancel his passport in 2015. He joined hundreds of others who were stopped from travelling on suspicion of travelling to the Middle East to join a terrorist group, and most of them are not being followed up just through lack of resources. I'm not saying that proper due diligence isn't being done in terms of assessing the risk. I just mean if we put more work into community work, working with, we're talking about young people in their teens and their 20s, frankly, mostly men, some girls as well. And working in that space is where we get the biggest results now.
There'll be a lot of people listening right now, and I'm not even sure what group I'm in, that if they've thought about going over there and fighting, is that a crime in itself?
No, the issue about stopping somebody's passport, cancelling a passport, stopping them boarding a plane, is that the threshold to do that, the burden of proof is fairly low. The burden of proof to lay charges against somebody and then go to a magistrate and convince the magistrate you've got a case and have the case proceed, then hopefully get a prosecution. That's incredibly difficult with terrorism cases because you're proving a what if. You're proving beyond reasonable doubt intent. And of course, figuring out what's going on inside anyone's head is very hard before they've done something. You don't want them to do something, but from a legal response, it's very, very tough. That's why counter-terrorism cases in Australia, as around the world, take years and years to process. So it makes sense you stop somebody travelling on good grounds, but that doesn't then mean you're in a position to go around and say, well, we're going to lay charges because you just can't do it, or even to put them high up the list of people you're surveilling. It's a question of resources and the numbers. We're talking about many hundreds of people.
We're talking to Professor Barton from Deakin University, counter-terrorism expert. Can I just draw a parallel here? I don't know if you're familiar with the case, but there's a famous AFL footballer, Dusty Martin, whose father was deported to New Zealand going back a couple of years because he was thought to be of not the right character to live in Australia. Now, it was Mr. Dutton that sent him overseas. I'm told at the moment that we can't just deport people we suspect of terrorism. What's the difference between the situation with Dusty Martin's father and someone that we suspect of being a terrorist? Why can't we deport them? Or why shouldn't we deport them?
There's two things there. There's the question, of course, whether Dusty's father or people in that case should have been deported. And many would argue, I join them in saying that overusing that sort of law undermines Australian society and undermines confidence. So I think there's a problem when you deport people on that basis anyway. Having said that, it is clear in the law. The law makes it relatively easy to deport somebody who's a dual national and for whom there's some case to be made about character or criminality, whatever the rights or the wrong of that. The law is quite clear. The law isn't clear about being able to deport somebody. Obviously, if they're Australian citizen, have any one nationality, you can't deport them in any case. But even if they weren't, the law doesn't make it easy to deal with people you suspect might be involved in terrorism.
All right. Thanks so much once again. Professor Greg Barton joins us from time to time, counter-terrorism expert at Deakin University. Let's hear from, this was obviously former immigration minister at the time, Peter Dutton.
Look, obviously the government has ramped up the number of visa cancellations, so people that have committed criminal offences, and we're very happy to expand that, but we would need to get the support of the Senate to do it. And there are a couple of bills, important bills around citizenship, where we've been knocked back. Look, if people have been made an Australian citizen, either by birth or by conferral, then that bestows upon them a constitutional protection as opposed to somebody who's here on a visa.
Roo, I want to be careful how I word this because, the Muslim population already this morning is very upset with our Prime Minister, and we've got to be careful that we don't just say, we think the Muslim religion is scary and dangerous, because it's a broad statement to make.
Extreme version.
It is. It's an extreme version. I think what we're concerned about are the 300 people of interest. Sorry, you're saying it's 400, isn't it? So there's a list of 400 people that our government is aware of that they're concerned about. And again, the old chestnut comes up, this man was known to police, or police were aware of this fella. It's no good saying that after the event. Every time something like this happens, no good saying, we were aware of this fella. You know, I never thought in my lifetime, Roo, this would happen in Adelaide, but do you remember in August, the woman here in our midst from Mansfield Park was jailed for dealings with ISIS.
Just communicating.
Yeah, just communicating. My question this morning is, 133353, the 300 or 400 people of interest, I mean, do we need to process them right now? Bring them in for interviews and say...
Dutton's saying they can't. They need to change the laws.
Well, I'm
they?
Saying you can. When you're the government, I reckon you run the joint.
Well, he's saying that they need to get it through Senate to be able to change laws, though, isn't he?
Yeah, we'll do that today.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm just...
Seriously.
I'm not disagreeing with
you. And I'm not having a crack. I'm saying to Mr. Dutton or whoever is at the top, actually changed the law today. And tell me, if there's anyone in politics today that stands up and vetoes this or argues against it, geez, I'd want to have a good explanation,
yep.
wouldn't they?
No, I agree. I don't like it.
Surely both sides of politics are going to agree on this for our safety, so that you can walk down Bourke Street in Melbourne or Rundle Mall in Adelaide without fear of being stabbed or run over or...
And on the other thing, not to try and have a crack at Professor Greg Barton, but comparing that to domestic violence, it's a total different issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a total different issue and really got nothing to do with it. Shouldn't even come up in the conversation.
Mm.
No one should die from a terrorist attack.
Yeah. Look, like I said, I don't want to go on some vigilante rant, but I reckon right now there's roughly 1,000 people on Nauru. Process their paperwork today, and if there's no explanation or they can't explain why they're here or what they want to be here for, then maybe we have to look at sending them home. And the other would be the 400 people on this list that's known to police, known to our authorities. Well, get an explanation today. Process them now.
Do something about it.
And either they stay or they get sent back.
Because we're not even looking
at it. Because it's too dangerous.
You can't even look at it. We haven't got the manpower to look after them properly.
No. All right, 133353. What do you think?
Have your say.
826, we're taking calls on 133353.
Let's go to Largs North. G'day, Bryce.
How are you, guys?
Good. What would you like to say?
Silly idea. If they're trying to go overseas or trying to get over there, why can't you let them go and don't let them come back? Or if they do come back, they're a lot higher on the list.
We did say earlier, I wasn't sure why we wouldn't let them go and not let them back either, but apparently it's a rule with all countries that if you know something's going to happen, you're not allowed to let them go over there. Mm. But it doesn't help what's going on in your own country.
No.
Unfortunately, Bryce, so I know where you're coming from. Let's go to the Onkaparinka Hills. G'day, Mark.
G'day there, Ruth and Dick. I just wanted to say, I'll let the others say other things, but your last comment about you thought, why bring up domestic violence,
yep.
I thought that was the best thing that gentleman said. He was saying you've got to put it in perspective. This is, these are isolated incidents and domestic violence is such a huge issue. So that's all he was trying to say.
Yeah, I agree with that, but it's not relevant, is it, to talking about terrorism?
It is relevant in that you've got to keep in perspective how it doesn't hardly happen. I know it's unfortunate and it shouldn't happen, but you can't take it out of perspective in how little this happens in our society. And so we've got to still go about our lives. So the people... that go into Bourke Street Mall, the ones that say, we're not going to let this change the way we live, that's the good attitude to have.
Yep.
Because it's such a minor thing.
Look, no one's denying that. I understand what you're trying to say, Mark, as well. So I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. I just don't think we shouldn't have to even have that as a threat. That's all I'm trying to say.
Mm. Nah, spot on. Taking calls in the aftermath of what happened in Melbourne on Friday, Roo.
Let's go to my Ponga. G'day, Shane.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are you going?
Good, thanks. What do you think?
Oh, mate, I just reckon this is just political correctness. If the politicians can't vote and make rules to make Australians safe, then they shouldn't be in a job. So if someone's a threat, deal with it, because otherwise you've got people that aren't a threat, can't even go down the bloody mall any of these days now, and I think it's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, good on you, Shane. And, Roo, I just want to go back to that point that people are deported all the time for all sorts of reasons. I think it's up to a government's discretion. Do you even have to give a reason? Like, you should be able to say, you are a person of interest watch list.
I don't know.
We're deporting you.
I'm not a lawyer, but it sounds like you have to actually have the right things in place to do it, Dit. So let's go to Torrens Park. G'day, Michael.
Two things I want to raise. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, called out the Muslim leaders of Australia to take control of their riffraff.
Yeah.
A Labor elected Member of Parliament, Anne Arley from Perth, in sympathy with that mob who was the previous caller before the song, saying about more women are killed by domestic violence, that's a bigger scourge. There is no competition in death. You can't put in a road accident, kill death victims. You can't put in domestic violence. Got nothing to do with the subject. This tow rag should have been deported when we had the opportunity and take a lot of his other mob with him.
Why can't the government do it then, Michael?
Well,
do you know?
They will. This will become an election issue, and you watch them all fall out of the trees now. It is
And is he right? Is Peter Dutton right that the Senate have to pass something for?
Well, I don't know. You need to watch Sky News or something to see what's going to happen. But finally, on poor old Dusty Martin's old man, he had known links to outlaw bikie gangs. We've got a law in Australia that deports them. So might have pissed off Mick Malloy, but it hadn't done Dusty Martin's old man much.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Let's go to Clarence Gardens. G'day, Pete.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Previous caller, I'm exactly right. The government has to get it through the Senate, and Dutton has tried on many occasions to deport people of interest, and it's been vetoed. You just have to listen to or tune into the ABC from time to time, shows like Q&A, and they treat the government as the enemy, and they have spokesmen like that Ali lady that the gentleman mentioned, that there's so much defensive undertones to Islamic terrorism. Malcolm Turnbull wouldn't even use that terminology. He would say religious terrorism.
Mm.
And that in itself sort of tells you a whole lot about how it's had an effect and how we have to be so politically correct.
And that's why Scott Morrison's in trouble now for what he said.
But what's wrong with putting the pressure on Muslim leaders to, debunk the fallacy that these people think that they will serve Allah by doing what they're doing, killing infidels, and they will wake up in paradise with 100 virgins? Why don't you get Limo on to make fun of that instead of Christianity?
Yeah, no, I understand. I don't understand how they can believe in what they believe in. It's just crazy stuff. Thanks for your call, Pete. Let's go to Evanston. G'day, Kirk.
Hey, mate, how are you?
Good, Kirk.
Mate, my view is I just think the government are too scared to actually take action because they're going to offend someone. This has happened all too often, and next thing you know, it's going to happen like the Cronulla riots, and it's going to go all out of hand. It's all on the government.
Yeah, well, I think some people in the government would like to make it happen, and there's a lot of people that don't want that far-right part of the government to get their way. I think that's what it gets down to, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the Peter Duttons of the world would do it tomorrow if he could, but then the Malcolm Turnbull side won't even say the word, so they can't get it through.
People
make
myself.
Fun of Peter Dutton all the time.
Yeah.
Calling him pineapple head and whatever, potato head or whatever they call him.
Mm.
And he's the one who would do more of this.
Yeah. I know. I agree with you.
Easy to pot him.
Mm.
Because he's got those extremist sort of views.
This discussion will go on for a long, long time, Ru.
Yep. Yeah. All right.
Ruined it here on Triple M.
Let's cut it off right now then.
Rossdale Homes, with over 30 years of building experience. RossdaleHomes.com.au.